The Retirement Conversation focuses on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join Joe and Dennis and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll take away practical ideas and tips to create your own. At Retirement Wisdom, we as retirement coaches help people think through their transition into retirement, as well as those who are in the early part of retirement but are looking for more from this stage of their lives. To find out more about us and how we can help you, you can schedule a free, no-obligation consultation with us. Simply go to retirementwisdom.com. On the top left corner, click on Get a Free Consultation. We would welcome the opportunity to speak to you. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Conversation with our guest, Jeff Tidwell. Jeff began his career with alternative newspapers and then moved online, where he has worked in Silicon Valley and New York, overseeing online communities and user experience for E-Trade, WebMD, Oncology.com, Market Tools, Chirp Interactive, and many startups via his consulting practice, Prepop. Today, he's the CEO and co-founder of Next for Me. Jeff has been a featured speaker at Tech Inclusion, is a regular contributor to Forbes, Chronicles of a 50-plus Entrepreneur, and is a regular guest on podcasts and longevity economy conferences and events. Jeff, welcome to the conversation today. And is there anything else you'd like to add to your bio?
Let me think here. Well, I'm speaking to you today from 5 acres in the Sierra foothills, about a half mile from Yosemite National Park. So it is possible to do your work in remote locations sometimes, but not all the time. So anyway, it's a beautiful day here in the mountains, and I'm glad to be joining you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this. So, Jeff, what led you to create Next for Me, and how would you describe your mission?
You know, at the highest level, we're trying to keep people working longer and finding meaningful, fulfilling work. Many people are in various situations when they're looking at the old idea of retiring at 65. And the truth is about 60% don't intend to retire at 65. And more than that are feeling a little uneasy about the amount of money they have put away for what is described as retirement. So staying working in an environment that is not always welcoming to people as they age is extremely important. And so we're trying to provide the tools and mindset to help them get through that and find a way. So it's systemic too. I mean, inside organizations and HR departments, they've got to start thinking about this too. There's a shortage of workers, and there's a lot of institutional knowledge and wisdom that comes with older workers. And so we're trying to break through some of that, but mostly from the side of the consumer who's got to keep working.
And you host events in various cities across the country. What happens at a Next for Me event?
Sure. In the public events, we normally have a series of speakers that'll give a brief little overview about various topics. And then we break out into groups around topics that matter to people. We're working on a series now that'll happen in Ohio in August. And the idea there is calling it Too Young to Be Done. That, you know, I got more to give here. So how am I going to adjust for that and stay in the game? And those are just a lot of fun. I mean, I think the culmination was last year in Washington, D.C., and we had a packed house and really interesting speakers from the White House, vets.gov, and Silvernest, which is a really interesting company that is matching roommates for empty nesters. And so housing is a big part of this conversation too, and work and relevance and all those kinds of things. So our next series, we do 3 nights in Ohio, like the Rolling Stones on tour or something. Then we're going to New York and Phoenix and Los Angeles after that. And then our readers also host more intimate events in their homes. So they get their friends together who might be in a similar phase of their life. And we try to mix it up and bring in some millennials as well, too, because they get such a bad rap. And actually, it's a really interesting generation who are very thoughtful about planning for the future and what role they might have in taking care of their parents and all of those things. So that intergenerational mix makes for a much more interesting conversation. And what we find is that once the topic is open, people really let go, and a lot of interesting dialogue happens because of that. But until then, there's a lot of shame and sense of failure sometimes that I haven't done the right things to be in the right place for this next stage of my life. You know, that may be true, but a lot of times it is simply the fact that we're living 20, 25 years longer than we used to, especially when the idea of 65-year-old retirement and Social Security were put into place. And so we just have to change the thinking of it. The game's got to change, you know, for the way we plan for the future. So that's what happens at our events.
So when you think of the people that attend, what are the big challenges that you hear about from them? What are they dealing with?
So the things that are acknowledged are, I suddenly don't feel like I have the same power or stature that I once had in the workplace. Things changed. You know, truth is, a lot of this is just flat out ageism, but it's buried in a lot of ways. I think people who are doing the hiring are not even aware they're doing it a lot of the time. It's so baked into us. I've been reading a book called The 100-Year Life, which is just great, talking about how to sort of restructure these phases of your life. And the truth is, there's so much baggage around the ideas of aging and dying and getting old that people are afraid to even broach the topic. It's been so buried inside of us for so long. And so that's the breakthrough we have to get through, is first of all, admitting it to ourselves and talking through it. And some of the work we're doing is partnering with a group called Hacking HR, which is an international group looking at new ways of addressing human resources. And, you know, AI, artificial intelligence, is coming along, which has baked in bias a lot of times that, you know, if it's scanning resumes and it's looking for years of graduation or whatever, those things can kind of be pushed out automatically. And so, you know, topics like that, and people are open to it. If you look at HR and diversity and inclusion, which has become the hot topic for everybody in the last 5-10 years, it's about women, it's about race, and it's about LGBT folks. And the last ism, we call it ageism, is not even addressed. And it is partially because of that stigma around it, I believe. And so it's starting to emerge a little bit, and we're hearing, you know, more conversation about it, partially because there's a shortage of workers and we got to deal with it. And part of it is because, you know, organizations like IBM had, you know, decades of basically pushing people out of their jobs because of their age through some reporting at ProPublica, and I forget who else they partnered with on that. I mean, it's just incredible. And I don't think a lot of the people who were doing it were really even that conscious of what they're doing, because this stuff is so baked in.
It's a great point about the diversity and inclusion efforts. And as a former HR person, I'm always tuned into that to the extent that I can be from this spot. But I've seen stats that under 10% of diversity and inclusion statements include age-related policies, to your point.
Yeah.
It's a great opportunity, people like yourself and others who are drawing more attention to it, to get that on the radar. And timing seems perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Any other big challenges? Well, I think you all have probably spoken about this before, but there's this phenomenon called the sandwich generation. Mm-hmm. It is a group of people, 50 to 65, let's say, who may have been along the right path and had their savings and 401ks humming along, and everything looked like they were doing the right things. 07, 08 crash came and wiped out a lot of the savings for people, or bum mortgages or what have you. At the same time, their kids were coming home from college, probably living with them because they had so much debt. And then their parents get sick. And so here are these people caught in the middle, propping up the adult children and their debt, and then taking care of their parents at the same time where their savings had dropped and gone away. And so they have to, in many ways, begin again, all at the same time that going out into the workplace again or trying to compete in a workplace has become more difficult for them. So that's this group of people that people aren't talking about yet. And there's a lot of anxiety that is sort of buried and I think is just starting to emerge.
Great point. And Jeff, what about the flip side? What are the opportunities that you hear the people 50 and up are most excited about?
You know, the doom and gloom thing does not play well. I'll say that, even though it's the truth a lot of times. But who's going to get through this with a dour attitude to go forward? And so, you know, we're kind of strong as far as fighting for our rights because we came out of civil rights and all the movements before us. And so we're kind of used to this and know how to stand up to things and make change in the world. And so you hear a lot of that, you know, okay, I've dealt with challenges before, let's go at this and hit it. It's also a time in life when people start thinking about their legacy and what they want to be known for at the end of the day. And so you see more people, you know, I call it the coaching industrial complex. So a lot of people are rising and creating their own workplace because another place might not have them, or they just can't deal with that anymore. And it's people helping people now. And so the entrepreneurial side to this is really interesting. And if there's some data around, you know, the common ages for people starting new businesses are mid to late 40s on average, and older entrepreneurs have a greater opportunity for success. So those things are positive, I think.
And I really enjoy reading your series in Forbes on your own journey as a 50-plus entrepreneur. And for our listeners, you'll find a link to the series in the show notes. And I'm curious, what are some of the key lessons that you've learned as an entrepreneur so far?
To be sort of meta about it all, writing about what you're doing is the most useful tool. You know, writing was not an easy thing for me necessarily, and I just pushed my way through it. And over the course of last year, I did 53 articles in Forbes. And it was, what happened this week? You know, what meetings did I have that could change my business and how I'm looking at it and those kinds of things? And the common themes that came out of that series, once I reflect on it later and look at it, you know, there's some big things. One, first of all, write about what you're doing, or if you're a visual person, you know, draw it out, map it out, do all those kinds of things that make you look at what you're doing in new ways, and it helps you think about it more creatively. And then partnerships were something that really came out too. And it was a natural thing for us to do, which was to find people who were working around the same topics and this sort of thing and partner with them for our events or for research that we conduct. And that really made a difference. It just magnifies and amplifies what you're doing because you've got somebody else along with you. And so the more of that we did, the more expansive we became and had new ways of thinking about what we were doing and met just tremendous people along the way. I mean, you know, there's, I'm sure you all have dealt with this in your other interviews and things, but the people that are working in this field are just tremendous and really supportive and helpful. And, you know, it kind of blew me away. Actually, I was surprised at how kind and open people were, and it's made me be more so too.
We've been very impressed with the people that we've encountered along the way. And this is, yeah, to have the same exact reaction. It's been great to interact with them.
Nice. Great to hear. Yeah. I was just trying to think of any other things that came out of the Forbes thing. Well, you know, a million doors opened. I'll say that. People would contact me and say, I read this, you know, from out of the blue, you know, that I wouldn't have thought would ever be exposed to this or whatever. So, you know, Forbes has more legs than I will ever have. And so, you know, you start getting things from people and new partnerships and that kind of thing. That helped as well. And I don't know, they were just great at Forbes too. I had an editor there that was really supportive. And even when I was, you know, not following all the rules and talking about myself too much and things like that, she'd calm me down in all the right ways. So.
You mentioned and touched on, it kind of touches on the topic of networking, this whole idea of partnering with people. And when I was reading a snippet of your report of understanding the 50 plus worker, the market report that you did put out, it said traditional networking is changed. Can you speak a little bit more about that? How so?
So one thing I recommend is one of our advisors, Karen Wickery, has written a book about taking the work out of networking. Tremendous book. I've known her for decades and she's excellent at this, you know, and it is that networking doesn't always have to have an objective. You're not trying to get something out of it. It is a decades-long process where you have a light touch with people throughout the years. And then when you do need some help from somebody, you're not coming out of the blue, and it's not a transactional sort of experience. The network, you know, God, I'm turning 60 in a month. And what this business has shown me is that I am so glad I wasn't a jerk to people along the way. Too much. And because I'll be darned, they show up all the time. You need to go back and have and ask them about something, or you're trying to get into an industry that they work in and you want their help. And they're ready to do that because through the years, you've maintained enough contact to say, oh, I know you're interested in this topic. Here's an article that you might like, you know, and it's not a setup that I thought in 20 years I'm going to be running this company and I'm going to need their help. It is because it's a genuinely natural interaction with people. And so if you get to this period where you're saying, oh, my gosh, I have to work longer, I need to almost start with a new sort of phase of my network, or your network has, you know, aged out, or it needs refreshing in some way. Sharon calls it, you know, tending to your garden. That becomes very important all over again. And hopefully, you know, people haven't stopped doing it, but I think they do, because in your mind, you're thinking, okay, you know, I've got another 10 years to get through this thing. And then supposedly I'm retiring, right? Well, you know, as we know, it's not going to work out that way. So you need a network even more than ever now, if you're going after the next kind of career. So keeping that fresh and tending to it is important.
Such a great point, because most people tend to think of networking, as you mentioned, transactional, and think of the tactics. But what you're talking about, it's a way of being and doing it in a very authentic way, building relationships.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it can be really great. And, you know, a lot of people hate the very name of networking, the word, and they associate it with a lot of awkward things, being in, you know, handing out your business cards in some group scenario or whatever. But no, and I always go back to a great book called What Color Is Your Parachute? That's, you know, in like its 35th edition now or something, but it had a great impact on me. And it said, you know, talked about things. If you're interested in an industry, or in this instance, you're going into a new phase of your career, you would do well to go seek out people who are doing that thing which you think you want to do, and just ask for a little of their time. And, you know, usually you can find out, is this really something I want to do? You'll get some insight from them if they're open to it. And of course, you're thoughtful of their time and that. But what will normally happen is those people will want you to check back in with them and say, you know, and you let them know how it's going, how your search, how your research into this industry is happening. And, you know, more times than not, if you're gracious and everything, they're going to start helping you and pointing you in directions that would be helpful to you.
Very true. Jeff, you mentioned at the beginning that really one of the big things that Next for Me is about is keeping people working. And we talked about the entrepreneurial path, and those statistics, when you read them, of older entrepreneurs are compelling, although there are some risks. And we can probably both agree it's not for everyone. How about people who are looking to go down?
I wonder if it's right for me.
Yeah, well, we're all on that journey, so it's an experience. But it's not for everyone. There are some people, as you mentioned, that want to keep working, that just want to keep continuing their career growth, maybe staying with the company they're with, maybe moving on to something different. What resources do you think people who are 50 and older need to do that? Where are the gaps? What's needed?
Yeah. Well, number one is the mindset. Again, are you open to new ways of doing things? Because so often we hear, I don't want to learn Slack. I don't need another data input. Why are you using Google Docs when I'm so comfortable with Microsoft Word? And, you know, so we're getting in our own way because we're limiting our creativity around ways to do work. And so you got to step away from the way you've been doing things. Be open to new ways of doing things. Hang out with younger people who are digital natives. And it might be a little confounding to you, but, you know, ask them. They're usually wide open to helping out. So our advisor Claire Martirana has been working at VA.gov, the veterans, modernizing the veterans tools. And she's a little younger than me, but she sits down and says, show me how this is working. How does that thing work? Right? She had to learn GitHub. And she's not a digital native by any means. And she got in there and figured it out along with some help, and she's on her way now. And so having that open attitude about things is really important.
Such a great point. And we're around the same age, so I think you can relate to what I'm about to say. The technology and the tools are getting a lot easier to use. If you go back to when we all first were exposed to technological tools,
I think
you have bad experiences with early Excel strings.
Lotus Notes.
Yeah, exactly. We can go through the graveyard. But they're easier to pick up. And it's that mindset of what we're used to and being open to new ways that might actually be easier ways, often are.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the attitude. I think the mindset is such a key word, because just be willing to try, and getting help from people who are perhaps just more experienced. And younger people have a propensity to want to share. They get excited when they're able to impart their knowledge. And I think people sometimes pull back because they may be expecting something from somebody else. Where just asking, you'd be surprised if people are willing to help. I think you make some great points.
We always like to ask a summary question at the end, Jeff. And for people listening, what advice would you offer them on how they can best evolve their life at this stage?
I think it's being open to new ways of doing things. And, you know, lifelong learning is, if you're into that anyway, you already know the benefits of it. But be open to learning new things, trying new things, not getting stuck on the old ways you're accustomed to doing things. The world's moving fast, things change. Run with it. Have fun. So I think that's it generally.
Great. Well said. And finally, how can people best follow Next4Me and learn about your upcoming events?
Next4Me.com. And we have a newsletter that you can sign up for. And we send that out weekly for the last year and a half. And it's filled with tips on, you know, finding your path and events that are coming up as well. And then on the other side of it, we support ourselves by selling research and workshops and these sort of things into organizations or to marketers who need to understand this market. And so we have a trends newsletter we've launched now and have a variety of products that marketers or organizations who want to understand this market a little bit better can get from us.
Great. Jeff, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom and insights. Really appreciate it.
Great. Good luck to you all. We'll see you in New York on October 10th. We'll be there for an event. I hope you all can join us then.
We'll definitely be there. And I just want to put in a plug for your newsletter. I'm a subscriber and really enjoy it. Great content and very easy to read. Well worth it.
Perfect. Thanks so much. That's great to hear.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Dennis, what are your takeaways from our conversation with Jeff Tidwell of Next4Me?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Always a fun to talk to people like this. And especially, I know we're going to attach this to the show notes. He did a market report just this past spring, right, called Understanding the 50-Plus Worker. So I recommend that you kind of click on that and take a look at it, because he quotes people who have attended his events and his meetups. And I think there are really some good information in there for people. From that and from Jeff, he mentioned a couple of things. First of all, we asked him about key lessons that he learned so far. And he found power in writing things down, visualization. He found the power in writing and telling his story. I thought that was great. He also found the power in partnering with others. And that doors opened for him because of being intentional about that. And we talked a little bit about networking. And what I resonated with me was the fact that networking is really for people who are in their 50-plus range. That has changed. Traditional networking doesn't work for them anymore. And he went on to talk a little bit about the fact that it's not transactional in the sense of approaching somebody with the intent of getting something out of it, but rather you're seeking out people that do what you might want to do and ask for their time. And then he said, very often these people want to check back with you, and that can foster a really good network and a good relationship and a good partnership. So I thought that was great advice. The other thing was on mindset. And we've heard this from a number of our guests, and I'm glad Jeff touched on this today, the importance of mindset and being open to the new ways of doing things and trying different things and hanging out with others that may be able to help you, share their time with you, et cetera. But having that open door mindset, that's the thinking that will get you to take that next step and actually take those actions, and you learn something from it. So those are the two key things for me. Joe, what about yourself?
Well, I'd pick up on your point about his comments about writing things down as you're going through them and how that can really tap into different ways of thinking, different parts of our brain, et cetera, and lead to greater creativity. So I think I see that in the coaching work I do with people who take up journaling. It doesn't have to be an article in Forbes. It could be if you want to go that route, but as he has done, those are well worth reading. But even a practice of journaling and reflection can really be very helpful. I, as a visual person, enjoyed hearing him talk about mapping it out and really seeing it and how that can help you. So I think that's useful as well. And then another thing he mentioned about networking, I think, was the authenticity. You know, think about it in advance. Don't do it on demand when you need it.
Good point.
Lay the foundation, do it for the right reasons, build the relationships, and that network will be in place when you do need to collaborate with people. So I thought it was a very healthy approach and very worthwhile for people to think of it in that way. And then the last thing I'll comment, because I hadn't really heard anyone talk about this or read about it this way yet, he reframed ageism for me, meaning he talked about it's the lassism, which we know, but he talked about how this generation naturally takes to fighting for our rights, civil rights movement, et cetera, other movements. That's a natural move, and it's a needed move. And admirable work is being done in this space by many people to get that turned around the right way. But what reframed it for me was he talked about there's also this other side about being open to new ways of doing things. I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both. You can fight ageism, but you can also be into things like lifelong learning, finding new ways to do things, intergenerational mentoring. And I think that combined approach is a very healthy way to go about it. And I hadn't heard that before.
Thanks for joining us today on The Retirement Conversation. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.